Hunter Biden gets a full pardon from daddy. We're going to talk about why that matters and what it means to Chinese intelligence, amongst other things. But this is going to be an interesting episode. Check it out. All right, guys. Well, welcome back to Defining Truth, episode 46. Getting close to Christmas, so I hope you're enjoying your jingle bells and cookies and whatever else you do. My house is thoroughly decorated for Christmas. It is the most wonderful time of the year, after all. This week, we're going to talk about this story that's rampant everywhere concerning Hunter Biden's pardon. Now, some of you may be thinking, like, well, what's the big deal, right? This is a huge deal. Huge. Number one, it's the first time a U.S. president has pardoned their child, like as in the history of the United States. There's much larger implications. Now, some of you may have heard or listened. We previously covered the Biden family involvement in organized and international crime. We did a two-part miniseries called Treason in the House. I would encourage you to go back and look at that. You can watch it on YouTube or listen anywhere you listen to your podcast. Where we went into detail concerning what was revealed by the discovery of Hunter Biden's laptop. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. But first, I want to get into this Hunter Biden pardon. So if you don't know, okay, on December 1st, 2024, President Joe Biden fully pardoned, and I mean unconditionally pardoned, his son Hunter Biden, covering any and all federal offenses committed or allegedly committed. Get this, though. Here's the pardon window. And I, you know, if you didn't know, there can be windows to these pardons, right? It's not just, he's not just pardoning him for a crime that he was convicted of, which he was convicted of several. He pardoned him for a window. And that includes all federal offenses committed between January 1, 2014 and December 1st, 2024. 11 years, 10 months, 10 years and 11 months. That is a massive window covering a lot of potential activity. It encompasses Hunter Biden's conviction for tax violations, firearm-related charge, potential money laundering. Kind of a random time, right? Or at least they want you to believe that. I am going to submit to you that that is not random, that there's a very specific reason for that 11-year period, because it covers a litany of Biden crime family activity. And that includes Joe Biden's brother, Joe himself, and Hunter, and others involved. Biden, according to the New York Post, made a statement about this. He said that it was justified, and the pardon was justified by asserting that his son was, quote, selectively and unfairly prosecuted. Laughable at best, coming from the guy that persecuted his political opponent to death. Literally, you have the Biden administration leading criminal charges and cases against Donald Trump all over the country, to the tune of millions of dollars in legal fees and loss. It's pretty insane that he actually says, you know, that Hunter was selectively and unfairly prosecuted. I mean, the guy literally is a drug addict, and he was convicted of buying and possessing a loaded firearm, and also hiding and concealing his money laundering activity and taxes from the U.S. government. And by the way, those charges, we'll get into them later. The taxes that he was convicted of covering up were specifically those gained through business with Chinese Communist Party tied organizations and foreign entities. Okay, and we'll get into why that's such a big deal. So that's what happened, okay? And I'd like to remind you all that the whole, like, oh, my son was unfairly pardoned, this is coming from Biden, who led efforts to criminally prosecute his political opponent, as we discussed, right? Including false collusion efforts, false steal dossier that they bought from Hillary Clinton going after Trump, false insurrection accusations, which never stuck and didn't go anywhere, false election interference accusations, like in Georgia, where the DA ends up getting in trouble herself for corruption, false intel doc spun up by the Blinken-Biden duo, concerning the authenticity of Russian disinformation, where they later were all made to look like absolute clowns when the Hunter laptop ended up being 100% totally verifiably accurate. And not to mention the media collusion and lies attempting to conceal this from the American people during the presidential election. That's important to remember, that all of this going after Trump occurred during the election. So now, oh, the tables have turned. He wants to pardon his son. I will submit to you this for consideration. I don't think the pardon has anything to do with the local gun charge or the tax evasion, although I'm sure that would be a significant amount of time. I believe he was convicted of 6 crimes. 3 were felony. The rest were misdemeanors. And it would have totaled 25 years in federal prison. But that aside, the reason he's covering a 11-year window is because, and we're going to go into this later, these convictions would end up being keys to the castle for a much larger investigation. A window of discovery, we could say, into the Biden's family connection to America's enemies. This is like behavior of the worst sort. So what have people said this week? Well, CNN anchor Caitlin Collins described the pardon as, quote, political time bomb, suggesting it could have significant repercussions for the Democratic Party, which it already has and it will continue to do. The New York Post says that CNN's Manu Raju expressed that the pardon could be seen as a, quote, stain on Biden's legacy, highlighting concerns about the president's commitment to upholding the integrity of the justice system. And CNN themselves noting Democratic Senator Michael Bennet remarked that the pardon serves as a gift to political opponents, potentially undermining efforts to rebuild public trust in governmental institutions. Of course, all of the above is correct. CNN, actually, Brandon, it's surprising, of all, have been like notably critical of the Biden administration just, you know, in the last month or so. Really right after the election, right? So what does this all mean, right? You're listening to this and you're like, okay, another corrupt politician. This is so much bigger. So let me just fill you in on what exactly this pardon covers up, okay? So I'm gonna talk about China and Ukraine, and I'm sure there's a lot more that would have been discovered had this blanket pardon not gone down. But let's just talk about China real quick. So Hunter and the Biden family have engaged in various business activities involving Chinese Communist Party affiliated organizations. Okay, and they've attracted a significant amount of scrutiny for this. We talked about before in our Treason in the House series, BHR Partners. Okay, so in 2013. Hunter Biden co-founded this BHR Partners. It's a private equity firm, okay? It was established in Shanghai Free Trade Zone. So I'll spare you the details on what it was, but essentially this is a Chinese communist-tied organization that yielded Hunter, at least, millions and millions of dollars. And the big question from people was, why? Why did Hunter Biden have a role? He has no experience in the energy sector. He has no experience or qualifications to contribute to a private equity firm other than peddling influence, other than he is Joe Biden's son. And this is where people start to, you know, squint a little bit. Something smells fishy. The firm BHR was a joint venture that included Rosemont Seneca Partners, which was co-founded by Biden, the Thornton Group, LLC, and Chinese entities such as the Bank of China. Okay, this is the Chinese Communist government. They focused on cross-border investments, automotive, mining, acquisition of cobalt, mining in Democratic Republic of Congo. I mean, the list goes on and on. Hunter Biden joined the board in 2013, acquiring a 10% equity stake in 2017. Okay, so the question is, why does this guy get a 10% stake in a multi-billion dollar business in 2017, seemingly out of nowhere after he flies over on daddy's plane and has a coffee with a friend? In October 2019, amid rising political scrutiny, Hunter announced his intention to resign from the board effective later that month. And by November 2021, his attorney confirmed that he was no longer held any direct or indirect interest in that company. So he was forced to resign. But knowing the pattern of history of concealing money flow, laundering financial sources, etc. I'm sure that was just a notional step down, right? There's a strong and deep connection between Chinese Communist Party affiliated organizations and the Biden family. And that's what's important. Now, if you thought it was just this equity firm, you'd be wrong, because there's another one, CEFC China Energy. Hunter Biden also had business dealings with CEFC China Energy. It's a conglomerate tied to the Chinese government between 2017 and 2018. So this is same time that he's doing stuff with the equity firm. He's also doing business, you know, with this energy company that's directly controlled by the Chinese government. Hunter's firm received $3.8 million in payment from a Chinese energy firm. Okay, let me just pause and remind you. We're going to go into this in a minute, but let me remind you that China is our greatest geopolitical opponent. They are savagely aggressive when it comes to espionage, intellectual theft, internal sabotage, spying on our political process. I mean, very, very deeply involved in counterintelligence and proactive intelligence operations against the United States. Anyone in government, especially at the level of vice president or president, knows this. You are briefed on this. You are read in on classified material. You know that there's a list of top aggressive countries that we have to deal with. We are constantly on guard. You have to report any type of conversation, any contact you have with foreign entities. It's all carefully scrutinized. So in light of that, it makes what I'm telling you now all the more outrageous that all of these national security safety features were ignored. Of course, his millions and millions in payments from this Chinese energy company have been scrutinized for potential ethical concerns, and I would add obvious national security concerns. Investigations into this. In December 2020, Hunter Biden disclosed that his tax affairs were under federal investigation, which means they were already looking into it for a while, and that investigation mainly focused on his foreign business dealings. The investigation examined whether he had violated tax, money laundering laws. 2022, a grand jury was convened to review the evidence. Later, I'm going to get to the actual convictions because there were some. But that was China. Now, we know from the laptop that Joe Biden was directly involved in these conversations with his son, because in the influence peddling accusation, Hunter Biden has, you know, text messages and emails where he's communicating with Chinese government affiliated organizations, and he's referring to the big man. He's referring to sitting with my father. He uses the fact that his father was the vice president and then eventually the president as a tool, as a weapon to wield and threaten other people. So the Bidens were making money for something. Okay. We'll come back to the depth of Chinese intelligence operations, but let's jump over to Ukraine. Also, this is also okay. Again, we're talking about Joe pardoning his son, Hunter. Okay. All of this is under that umbrella. Hunter's association with Burisma Holdings, which we talked about before, it's a Ukrainian natural gas company, has been the focal point of a lot of scrutiny and controversy. In April, 2014, Hunter joined this company's board of directors. Again, for what? He has no energy experience. He's not an oil executive. He's a crackhead. He's addicted to drugs. He's been convicted of, you know, a felon in possession of a firearm. I mean, what? Why would he be there other than influencing and influence peddling and his connection to his dad? Okay, it's kind of obvious, right? At the time of this appointment, Joe Biden was the vice president of the United States, and he was overseeing U.S. policy towards Ukraine. Just a tiny bit of conflict of interest there. Biden's role as there on the board of directors was advising on corporate governance and expansion strategies. However, his appointment raised concerns due to his obvious lack of experience in the energy sector and potential for perceived conflict of interest. That's according to PolitiFact. Burisma and its owner, Mykola Zlochevsky, were subjects of investigations by Ukrainian authorities for alleged corruption. You'll remember this little story here. In 2015, U.S. diplomat George Kent expressed concerns about the optics of Hunter Biden's position on Burisma board, given the company's reputation and the U.S. government's anti-corruption efforts in Ukraine. Now, skip forward. Biden's in office, and he's overseeing, you know, the Ukrainian affairs, et cetera, et cetera. He gets on a call, right? And if you recall, he threatens to withhold $1 billion in U.S. taxpayer aid to Ukraine if the prosecutor looking into this corruption wasn't fired immediately. Conflict of interest, maybe. Very bold, very open. They didn't hide anything. They know that they were untouchable because they controlled America's bureaucracies. The DOJ is in their pocket, filthy and corrupt. FBI has turned into a cesspool of corruption. And it allowed people to open air, without even hiding it, conduct corrupt and illegal activities that threaten the national security of the United States. When these allegations came out of Joe Biden pressuring Ukraine to dismiss the prosecutor, it was Viktor Shokin was his name. We talked about him extensively in the past. It was just all swept under the rug. So it went away. And everybody just seemed to forget that Hunter Biden was a member of the board of directors. So all of this culminates in December this month, where Joe Biden, knowing that he's outgoing, Trump is coming in to the White House, issues a blanket, full and unconditional pardon to Hunter Biden, covering an 11-year period for any and all federal offenses that he may or may have not committed. Seems legit, right? Be nice to have a daddy with that kind of power, I guess. Especially if you're a drug addict and in money laundering and involved in, threatening national security. All right, so if you want to know specifically what he pardoned as far as convictions, because it did cover things that he may or may not have done in that 11-year period, but he was actually convicted of 6 different crimes. So as of today, December 6th, Hunter stands convicted of multiple federal offenses. So he had firearms related. It was 3 felony counts related to illegal purchase and possession of a firearm by a person addicted to drugs. False statement during the purchase. He declared on a background check that he was not an unlawful user. Okay. Possession of a firearm by a prohibited person, which means an addict, a drug addict, is not allowed to own, a loaded gun, firearm. All of these together, including the misdemeanors, were a potential maximum of 25 years in prison, like we said. And then he had several tax-related convictions. It was actually 9 tax offenses that they convicted. 3 felony tax offenses involved a scheme to evade the assessment and payment of federal taxes from 2016 through 2019. Perfectly in that window, by the way. So, he's good to go. He failed to pay at least $1.4 million in self-assessed federal taxes. And they're alleging that most of that was probably coming from America's global opponents in China. Can you imagine, Brandon, if, we get a letter and the IRS is like, you owe $20, and if it's not paid, we're going to destroy your life. We're going to put a lien on your home. And this guy lied about $1.4 million. That's more money than most of us will see in our lifetime. And it's no big deal. It's nothing. He had 6 misdemeanor tax offenses in addition to that, which would have equaled a maximum penalty of 17 years in prison. So, needless to say, I do not believe that this pardon had anything really to do with Hunter. Joe Biden is a terrible father, obviously. He's enabled his son to use drugs, to be involved in all kinds of sexual, moral turpitude. There's all kinds of nasty things this family's been involved in. They trade and peddle influence. They've betrayed the trust of their nation by dealing with America's enemies for profit. It's not about being a father. This is my opinion. If I was an investigator, I would say this pardon is about protecting the Biden family and Joe's involvement and his brother James. If you're not familiar, there's a term we use in law enforcement called keys to the castle, right? In the context of like warrants and investigation, it's referring to the legal authority or investigative tools that provide you critical access to evidence, right? Like specifically like what I need to get a search warrant. Probable cause is a key to the castle. But in this, in terms of an investigation, keys to the castle can be when you just can't, let's say you're investigating the mob or a, you know, Russian organized crime group. If you just can't seem to get them, you know what they're doing, right? You know, they're committing crimes, they're laundering money, they're killing people, but the mob is good at covering their business, right? Or disconnecting leadership from those actually committing the crime. So sometimes you need something that we would deem the keys to the castle, right? It could be a slip up that they make, like a tax issue, right? It's how they got Al Capone. It's not going to be the big murder charge that you want, but it'll be the key to the castle. This crime, this slip up will allow you to get into where you need to be, right? Subpoenas, digital evidence, like maybe, well, this is what we saw with Hunter Biden's laptop, right? Oftentimes in investigations, I would look for this access, right? Decrypting a suspect's phone or email accounts. You know, we use tools like Cellbrite or Greykey where we can extract data from your cell phone. And if you have probable cause to get into that phone and you're within constitutional right to view the contents, then it can often now expand your investigation because you're now going to see what they're really doing, right? You may find evidence for that murder. You may find evidence for that act of treason. So why is this important? Because, well, one, it's important for those of us that follow the law because you need appropriate access, right? Constitutional access, doing things the right way. Otherwise you get to court and everything's fruit of the poisonous tree. But mainly it's for accessing critical evidence or information that leads to breakthroughs, turning points, or resolution of cases. So think of this in terms of the Biden family, right? The laptop was a huge blow for them. It gave a window, it gave access into potential, you know, treasonous activities that the Biden family was doing. And they tried really hard to cover it up. The media colluded to hide it from the American people, the left media. The Biden family colluded to conceal it and hide. The Department of Justice did not appropriately investigate that laptop. If this would have been anyone else, I'm telling you right now, anyone else, if your laptop had evidence of you chatting with Chinese Communist Party officials and there was millions of dollars at stake in regards to laundering, you would full-blown be under a task force investigating your activity. So all these allegations against Joe Biden and his son and his brother, James, right, involve claims of improper foreign business dealings, particularly in China and Ukraine, but I'm sure it's everywhere else. So, you know, to recap, Hunter's on multiple boards in China that have direct dealings with the Chinese government. He's involved in Burisma Holdings or was with the Ukrainian energy company in Ukraine. All of this netting results of millions of dollars, by the way. James Biden was implicated in business ventures involving foreign entities, including China as well. I mean, they're all dirty. And the brother specifically was accused of leveraging the Biden name for financial gains. As of 2023, there was a House Oversight Committee investigating the Biden family's foreign business activities, and it's ongoing. And their aim is to determine whether these dealings compromise U.S. national security. So this pardon is huge. It's a big deal. Biden knows exactly what they've done over the last decade or more, and he just blanket covered all of it. And what this means is that when you have a blanket pardon that covers an 11-year period, nothing within that window, you can't even start to investigate. It's pardoned. It's dead. You try to take it to the U.S. Attorney's office, they're going to say this is under a pardon period. It's a window covered of blanket immunity. You can't start it, and anything ongoing, you might as well just throw it out the window because it'll never get prosecuted. Why does this matter? And I'll close with this as far as the pardon. We keep talking about Chinese, you know, communist government affiliations and this and that. Let me just read you in a little bit on Chinese intelligence operations. Okay, China's intelligence operations pose probably the greatest, most significant ongoing threat to the United States. They target critical infrastructure or CISA stuff, private sector entities, political leadership, data breaches. I'll give you an example. There's a Chinese state-sponsored hacking group. Okay, these are hackers like committing international crimes. They're sponsored by the Chinese Communist Party. It's called Salt Typhoon. All right, anybody listening, you can look them up, get into them deeper. But Salt Typhoon infiltrated major U.S. telecommunications providers like AT&T, Verizon, Lumen. Those particular breaches comprised private communications of numerous Americans, including high-profile political figures. These hackers accessed call metadata. In some instances, they even had call content. So you're talking about some interesting technology they're applying. Salt Typhoon also targeted political leaders like Donald Trump and J.D. Vance just recently, which indicates a concerted Chinese intelligence effort to gather intelligence on U.S. political processes and leadership. Okay, now, I just gave you one. There's a world of information there. I just gave you one little example of what China is doing. But imagine they're putting all that effort and intelligence activity into you know, anti-U.S. efforts. And imagine that they're paying the Biden family, the president of the United States and his son, millions of dollars. You don't think they're getting something out of that? You think the Chinese Communist Party gives free money away to the highest ranking office in the United States government? There's a reason for that. And where there's smoke, there's fire. And Biden knows that, and so blanket immunity. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. The FBI identified China's intelligence operations as the gravest threat to the U.S. economy, well-being, and democratic values of America, as they've engaged in extensive cyber and human infiltration of national security organizations. This is who we're talking about when we say Hunter's in bed with them, on a board with them. Biden being using his influence to gain money from them. America's enemies do not pay people for nothing, okay? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. If China's doing this, right, to the U.S., what are they paying the Bidens for? And I'll leave it there. That's my question. What are they paying Hunter Biden for? He has no qualifications to be on an energy company's board. I mean, they're our greatest, you know, intelligence threat. And they're paying the president of the United States and his son. No? Am I just dumb? Or like, does anyone else hear this? Like, wow. And then, you know, if you had any doubt at all, because at first it was just, you know, it was like, oh, it's deflect. You know, none of this is true. It's a lie. I'm a political victim. The Republicans are coming after me. It's like, really? Really? Well, if that was true, why do you need an 11-year blanket immunity covering anything that may or may not have happened? You know, nothing happened, but this 11-year period is totally, you know, you can't convict me of anything. It's astounding. It's astounding what they get away with. You know, Brandon, you and I were talking before we started, and it's like, I take a step back sometimes, and I'm like, how do they get away with this? You know, one thing I've just sort of thought about, and I don't have any proof of this, but, you know, you almost wonder, like, is just everybody there just filthy dirty? So they don't prosecute or go after stuff like this because they really don't want people looking in to what they're doing. I would love to be on an independent investigative task force. Like, bring me on. I mean, Mr. Trump, if you're listening to this, President Trump or J.D. Vance or anybody with any connections, like, my name is Josiah O'Neill. I would love to be part of a task force to investigate threats against national security. We can put together a great team to do it. Like, I don't understand why it's never been done. And we, over the last 4 years in this Biden administration, have seen the extent and depth of corruption and damage this country has suffered because of this nonsense in bureaucrats. It's really hard to believe, but believe it. And Biden pardoning his son is about as close as you're going to get to an admission of guilt. And I think everyone knows that. You know, when CNN is on there like apologizing and berating Biden's decision, you know the world is flipped upside down. So anyways, if you didn't know, now you know. That's what the pardon's about. And I don't know where this goes from here. I mean, it doesn't cover, I mean, correct me, I could be wrong. I don't think it covers state crimes.
So that's what I was going to ask you. So given your like investigative background, you know, how can a state's attorney general go after him for like these same crimes, right? I mean, obviously federal taxes and things like that, they're not going to go after him for, but if I was the Republican state attorney generals, I would be getting ready. I would be getting together with, you know, I don't know how many of them are, but I think like 30 or so that are Republicans. I would be getting together in every state. I would be like, okay, how are we going to prosecute him? Now, governors also have the ability to give pardons. So I don't think that he's going to be getting prosecuted in states like New York or California. Yeah. But there's got to be a way to go after him. This is the first time, like you said, that a president has pardoned their son. And then if I'm not mistaken, it's either the first time or has not happened often where somebody gets pardoned for a crime that they haven't been charged or convicted with. Like, for example,
that is strange.
They were trying to compare this to Trump pardoning, you know, Sheriff Joe Arpaio, but Arpaio had already been charged and convicted of a crime. He just hadn't been sentenced yet, and Trump pardoned him. So for this blanket immunity to be for crimes that, like you said, may or may not have been committed.
It's like, who are you talking to?
Yeah. I mean, and to go back real quick, because we got to move to the next segment, but to go back to, I'm looking at Biden's statement on, you know, whitehouse.gov. He says, for my entire career, I have followed a simple principle. Just tell the American people the truth. They'll be fair-minded. Here's the truth. I believe in the justice system. But as I have wrestled with this, I also believe raw politics has infected this process and it's led to a miscarriage of justice. And once I made this decision this weekend, there was no sense in delaying it further. I hope Americans understand why a father and a president would come to this decision.
Oh, we understand.
And he started off, you know, earlier in it saying that he wasn't going to do it. So he lied lied. Do you want to talk about being truthful to the American people? You lied. And then you had your press secretary lie for, you know, months going on a year. So,
well, let me answer your, just to touch real quick before we move on your state versus federal. So oftentimes, you know, in a task force or investigation, you very often start on the state level. It's, you know, hard charges out there working patrol, stop a car, you know, there's always a beginning. Now, sometimes it starts on the federal side. It does. But a lot of these really big, good, you know, especially organized crime cases will involve state, local and federal charges. And really what the sort of decision process in that, it involves the district attorney if you're prosecuting state charges. And if it's on the federal side, it involves the AUSA, the assistant U.S. attorney, and the whatever district you're prosecuting the case out of. And so what usually happens is you look at the evidence that you have and you decide as an investigative team, like what's our best, you know, approach here? Are we going to get more bang for our buck charging on the state side, or is it better to go federal? And most times it goes federal because of all the resources and different agencies and departments. And, you know, if I were to put together a case against, like, say, you know, a conspiracy case, maybe there's a group of individuals operating under a criminal conspiracy to commit fraud, to defraud. It could be violence. It could be cyber. It could be, you know, could be all these things. Well, on the federal side, you just put together your crew. You know, you call ATF's got a role, DOJ's got a role, you know, DSS, you know, it could be anybody with their particular area of expertise. So the problem, I think, with the Biden situation is a lot of these, like, when you talk about national security and espionage and treason, those are all federal crimes, right? Like, I'm not aware of, like, at least here in California, of a penal code related to, you know, espionage. If the crime is against the United States, there really isn't a charge on the state level. That's the problem with, like, you know, we talked about keys to the castle earlier, right? That's why organized crime groups always get hung up with, like, wire fraud, because as soon as you transfer money, banks, it goes across state lines and it makes it federal, right? So you could try to go for some, like, money laundering case on the state side, but the federal side just has heavier punishments for it. I would assume that there could be, you know, see, I don't know. I mean, even tax issues. I mean, you're talking, that's federal. That's IRS. You know, I don't know.
Well, if he owes taxes to the federal government, I bet he owes taxes to a couple states too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and you see what they do, though. They sort of operate in blue states where you have Soros corrupt, you know, DAs pardoning all kinds of nonsense. And this family, the Biden family, has been around for a very, very long time, right? They are the definition of the swamp, and they know how to do this stuff. They cover their tracks. They're filthy dirty. I mean, think about Hunter Biden's activities. He's got, like, you know, young girls and hookers in hotel rooms and drugs. And this is, like, while his dad is in office. He just doesn't care. You know, I mean, they found cocaine in the White House. Like, they unabashedly.
No, they didn't. No.
They found it. They just inexplicably, it was like, well, there's only one crackhead in the White House, but it's probably not his, right? Like, I mean, yeah, there's just almost no shame. There's such a boldness in what they do. And I think that, you know, Trump winning the election was a big upset because this really, like, threw them off their OODA loop. You know, they were like, oh no. Like, and then of course the immediate reaction, you see Biden's like, blanket pardon. Like, don't even start. Don't even start looking into my family's business dealings with America's enemies. It's pretty bad, dude. I mean, I'm just shocked, you know, that they get away with this. But my concern is for my country. Okay. Let's set the Bidens aside, right? Let's look at the bigger picture. The fact that our global opponents are able to so easily swindle the American people because of how our politicians have behaved, right? We've gone into this before. You're talking like China had spies like driving politicians, and you know, you had Eric Swalwell had an affair with a Chinese spy. I mean, they are deep in tech companies and business and corporations. I mean, and we're just kind of dumb. You know, the left just wove this narrative that's like, if you ever say anything bad about any other country, like you're a racist, or what about just common sense? What about common sense? You know, what about we just protect our nation and not lose out? The implications of the loss that we've suffered due to Chinese intelligence effort is way, way bigger than we even have time to explain right now. On the intellectual property side alone, you're talking about weapon systems, inventions, software, things that we work really hard to develop. They don't spend time developing. They just steal it from us.
Yeah, and then they tell Elon Musk, a, you know, defense contractor with Starlink that is not allowed to hire foreign nationals. They go after him for not hiring foreign nationals, and he's like, "Are you kidding me?" I mean, it's all the woke mind virus.
Yeah, it's pretty hypocritical. Anyways, that's the pardon coverage. We'll try to stay on top of that. Follow us, if you can, on social media, Instagram, X, et cetera. We're going to go into the next segment. Brandon, you're going to lead this off.
Yeah. So as we wrap, we want to touch on the United Healthcare CEO. At this point, it looks like an execution. So on December 4th, 2024, Brian Thompson, the United Healthcare CEO, was leaving his hotel in New York at the Hilton Midtown when he was shot and killed. Authorities are calling this a targeted attack, and the suspect described as a white male, approximately 6 foot 1 inch tall, wearing dark clothing, fled the scene on an electric bike. At this time, he's still at large. Thompson had been at the helm of United Healthcare since 2021. Unlike many CEOs, which we're going to get into this a little bit more because of the business side of things, he maintained a low public profile, but he was essentially, he had no protection. He was just walking on the street by himself, and he is the CEO of, I think it's the largest insurance company in the country, and one of the largest companies in the country. So for him to be alone or have no security details is just abnormal. And so what we know so far, like I mentioned, it happened outside the New York Hilton Midtown. The suspect remains at large, but authorities are actively investigating. Surveillance footage, captured images of the suspect, and DNA evidence has been recovered from items left at the scene, including a cell phone. I just got an alert while we were in the last segment that NYPD has contacted the Atlanta Police Department because it sounds like last month, the day before Thanksgiving, he took a bus from Atlanta to New York. So they're trying to figure out what the connection is here. One particular chilling detail, the shell casings found at the site were inscribed with words like deny, defend, depose. Yeah. And some speculate that these words could allude to a controversial practices within the insurance industry. Although no direct connection has been confirmed, the possibility adds an unsettling layer to this kind of already tragic event, which seems interesting given from what I read that it seems like Thompson had, under his leadership with United Healthcare, had shifted toward a more of a value-based care, providing prioritizing preventative health. But it seems like this person had a vendetta against, this was not random, is what I'm trying to get at. So this kind of poses a couple questions. How do leaders in high-stakes industries, and this is your expertise, navigate personal risks that come with their roles? And then what does this mean for a company like United Healthcare, which now faces a leadership void during a time of transformation? Because like I said, Thompson's approach to healthcare seemingly was, by all accounts, progressive, as he aimed to tackle inefficiencies in a system that many feel is broken. So, yeah, I'll let you take it from there as kind of the tactical and lack of security side of things, you know, where this kind of fell through from the beginning.
Yeah, no, it's pretty gruesome. If you haven't seen the video, it's out there. He was lying in wait, sort of hiding. The CEO walks out completely unprotected, alone, by himself, and the shooter runs up from behind him and fires. Looks like first round went through his calf, I think, and then eventually, you know, hitting his body.
Well, this guy clearly didn't know what he... I mean, you saw the video. He yeah. fires off one shot, racks it, fires off another, racks
so
it
here's,
again.
So here's my thoughts on that. To me, I don't think he was like a professional hitman, but I think based on what I saw, it looks like he definitely has been to the range because... So he performs remedial action. What I mean by that, if you're listening, you don't know, remedial action is when a firearm misfires, you're trained on how to very quickly fix the problem so you can get back in the fight, right? That's like the military teaches that, law enforcement teaches that. To be clear, he's using subsonic ammunition most likely because when you have a pistol that's outfitted with a suppressor, the subsonic ammunition is notorious for not having enough kick behind it to fully rack, you know, the firearm and then engage and get it back into battery. So, and there's a reason for that. Is subsonic is very quiet, right? So he wanted quiet. But if you look at the video online, he fires and he, without even skipping a beat, he like racks it again very quickly and fires. And then at one point it jams, and he actually hits the back of it with his hand, which is a remedial action, racks the round and fires again. So I think, and people pointed out, they're like, oh, well, a professional would have gone up and fired right into the base of his head or, you know, been more professional. I don't think he's a professional killer, but I think he definitely prepared because he knows a little bit about what he's using. It's almost like the gun, not racking every time was not a surprise to him. He very quickly fired, racked. So that makes me think he probably did that at a range somewhere or, you know, out in the woods or whatever. The other thing that makes me think there was a lot of planning involved. And again, I'm not alluding to knowing anything about who this person is. Like, I don't know, but clearly there's planning because they found a fake ID and a cell phone that they have now confirmed belonged to the shooter. And that's what he used when he came up on the bus. So he came up actually 10 days before. See, that makes perfect sense to me because as we often talk about in the security industry, there's an attack threat, you know, a wheel, a cycle, right? Office of DNI has it. You can go look. DHS has it. And that attack wheel involves pre-planning and surveillance, right? So I have no doubt that this was thought out. Clearly, he knew where the guy was going
to
be.
Well, and for him to know where a seemingly such low profile CEO is going to be 10 days prior. I mean, you're exactly right. That had to have taken, I mean, quite a bit of planning. It just seems abnormal. So
I think there's more than one person involved. And one key aspect that just came out today on that is, investigators confirmed that video surveillance of Central Park showed the suspect exited around West 60th Street without the backpack he was wearing during the shooting. Okay, so remember, he's shooting, he's wearing this big backpack, and then he disappears into Central Park, and they just mysteriously can't find him. When he comes out, he's got no backpack, and they cannot find a backpack. That's weird to me. That's not a small bag. And Central Park is a confined known location. I mean, you have an entire department just to patrol Central Park. So they know where he went in and they know where he came out and they know what time he went in and what time he came out, but there's no backpack. That to me smells of there's another person involved. That backpack got out of Central Park somehow without anyone seeing, and or he did something with it, right? So that seems very interesting to me. So you have 10 days, he's there 10 days before. So to me, I'm assuming he was conducting planning and surveillance, right? He's got a suppressed weapon. He's got the ammunition. He's got whatever he's got in his backpack. All of that was got there somehow, right? And I don't know. I mean, I haven't ridden a bus in a long time. I haven't been on a Greyhound. I don't know. Maybe you know, but like, is there no security measure? Can you get on a bus with a suppressed pistol?
I have no idea. I've never been on public transportation like that. Yeah. But
I've taken the bus back in the day, but I don't remember.
I mean, I think that's how most people who want to travel under the radar kind of travel. I think you probably just get on the bus and go.
Again, another indication of obvious planning. He had a fake ID and he used it to check into a hostel where he stayed. So this was thought out quite a bit, right? How I'm going to get there, what I'm going to use, what I'm going to do, all the way until after. He thought through the aftermath. Like, there was no hesitation. He fires the shots at the CEO, and then he immediately follows his plan. I mean, he beats feet pretty quick. He uses an electric scooter originally, dumps it, enters Central Park on foot, disappears, comes out without the bag, and no one can find him. Now, it's breaking just now that they did recover a water bottle that they think is his, and they're going to pull DNA from it. So that'll be interesting.
But I mean, so correct me if I'm wrong, but if prior to this, he's not in the system, I mean,
it won't mean anything. No. So DNA is useful if you've been in the system, obviously, if you've collected your DNA from somewhere at some point, then they could use it to identify.
But I guess if they pull fingerprints and he's ever been fingerprinted, I mean, plenty of people who are not criminals have been fingerprinted.
I don't remember. So. Was he wearing gloves in the video? I think he was. I don't think they're going to get fingerprints or they would have said that. The DNA basically, DNA could sit there for 50 years. That's how some of these cold cases get solved. You know what I mean? Where somebody finally pops and DNA comes up for some reason. I heard a lot of speculation about, you know, who it was and, you know, is it an organization? And I heard, you know, one guy online talking about, you know, it could have been like a drug addict that like they paid in drugs and then they're going to have him overdose and it covers it up. I mean, there's lots of schemes that you could hypothesize.
He's not really acting like a drug addict, though.
I don't think so either. I think he was nervous. You know, I think the whole like, well, why didn't he's not a pro because he didn't go up and shoot him in the head. And I'm like, well, because he's probably not a professional killer, but he was definitely committed and he definitely had a plan and he definitely had fired a suppressed pistol before because that didn't shock him. It didn't surprise him. You know what I mean? There are a lot of people, if you don't have any experience in firearms, if you pull the trigger and it jams, you're not going to know what to do.
Well, that's why I'd mention it, because to me, without you explaining it, it almost looked like he didn't know how to operate it. But when you explain it that way, you're right. He knew exactly what he was doing because he clearly experienced it before.
Know, 22s are notorious for jamming. I mean, and it is a weapon that's carried by people. I remember seeing some very special tier one guys in Baghdad that had, you know, suppressed pistols and smaller calibers, or at least subsonic calibers. That is something that people use. And unfortunately, they do jam a lot. So not all of them, but like I said, if this is a guy that maybe isn't a professional killer, but he was highly motivated, right? He was committed. He planned his trip. He showed up with way far and beyond enough time. 10 days before is a lot of time to, you know, do final checks, conduct final, you know, secondary surveillance, target acquisition, confirmation. I wonder if he even ran his routes before, which is, you know, a thing that if you're doing like con ops or concept of operation training, like you're going to try to do as close to real world as possible. So, you know, did he walk the route? Was he on that scooter, you know, 9 days before when he got there? Did he go into Central Park? Did he, you know, pre-stage a location where he knew he could dispose of the bag? Maybe there's another person. Maybe there's another person in Central Park with like another bag. You just put that bag into that bag and crumple it up. You know, I haven't seen surveillance of him leaving. So I don't know what he had, and like, did he did he change? Like, I'm not sure. To be honest, I haven't heard that yet. But
well, and he would have had to sit outside of the hotel all night, because how would he have known exactly when that guy was going to leave the hotel room and go walk to where he was going?
That's your pre-planning and surveillance. He obviously knew where he was going to be, so he accessed his schedule. So that's a good point. So let me touch on that real quick. This is why, if you are a very high net worth value person, you need security, right? Remember, the CEO, as you pointed out, is the CEO of one of the largest organizations in the country. And he was there to address stockholders. And some of them, I'm sure, are going to be upset, are going to be angry. During protective operations, part of a real professionals, I'm not talking about like just because you're 6'5" and you're heavy set and you can bodyguard. I'm talking about professional protective operations, right? Like what we did in the diplomatic security service, what Secret Service does. Those are the two like prime top agencies for protection. But that's why we send advance parties, and we're out there. We're aware of how, potential shooters operate, how threats operate. And we try to interrupt that cycle. We know that oftentimes there's pre-action surveillance conducted. So you watch, right? And even the way that we walk and move is all orchestrated. It's an orchestrated dance to catch things like that. This guy ran up behind him. If he was working with a protective detail, that would have never worked. I mean, he could have tried, right? But he would have been met with immediate violent force. An agent or detail member who is coming up on the rear, right, would have engaged, because when you walk outside a door, you clear left and right. We do things like holding. Like if you're going to, if your VIP is going to walk around a corner to the right, okay, and this is assuming you have enough people, it's not a one-man detail, but let's say you have three or four guys to protect him. One of your leads is going to push up to the left, and they're going to post right there around that corner so that when your VIP turns right, no one shoots him in the back. And this is all like, this is no need to reinvent the wheel. Protection's been figured out for years. It's constantly evolving. Some of us did protection in like really high threat areas overseas. These TTPs work. The problem with this guy is he had nothing, nothing. My next question would be, for such a high net value person, is who's watching OSINT and open source intel? Like, who's watching social media? Were there threats online? Were there threats against the company? Is someone analyzing and looking at that? I mean, it sounds like these guys need to call, O'Neill Security Group, because that's the kind of like sort of basic protection level that you would expect from such a high net individual.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing that the next CEO of this healthcare group is going to have some pretty locked down security, so...
Yeah, I mean, it's hard enough. It's hard enough to do the protective work when you do have a professional dedicated team. But like when you have nothing, you're just wide open for it. So very sad. I'm sure we'll hear more about it. I mean, this is like documentary worthy incident here. I'm sure more details will come out. But for us today, that's about all we got, Brandon, unless you got something else. All right. As always, guys, please follow us at Defining Truth on Instagram, X, watch us on YouTube, listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, anywhere you get it. It's all out there. And do me a favor and share. Okay. Give the gift of sharing our podcast this Christmas season. That would be wonderful. Sharing it helps us reach more people. And we do cover a variety of topics. Today was a lot about the news, but we always try to bring a Christian Judaic perspective into what we're talking about and what we're doing, give you the real truth about whether it's geopolitics or the news, etc. We really appreciate it. And until next time, keep defining truth.